Be forewarned. If you are easily upset or don't have the stomach for controversy, do not listen to this program.
You know why? You know why they went after Trump? Do you know why the Mueller investigation was started? You know why Mueller was appointed? Mueller was appointed as special counsel because Donald Trump had the gall, the chutzpah, the temerity to fire the FBI director. This is The Decline and Fall of America, formerly known as The Jim Greenfield Show, starring Jim Greenfield, star of The Decline and Fall of America, and my sidekick and producer, Stuart Rice, formerly known as Stuart White.
Yep.
Should I make that joke every episode?
It's better when you switch it up. I think it's not funnier, but I think it just adds a little more.
Okay, formerly known as Stuart Wheat.
That's it.
Quote of the day. You say you are my friend, but when I was down, you just stood there grinning. You recognize it?
Is that a Leonard Cohen?
Bob Dylan. Close enough.
This same guy just wants Canadian.
You say you are my friend, but when I was down, you just stood there grinning. And then something about, you just want to be on the side that's winning. Rhymes with grinning.
He's quite the wordsmith. But can he rhyme turpitude?
Turpitude. Moral turpitude. That was what I was trying to say.
Yes.
This is Rush Limbaugh with talent on loan from God. Actually, it's Jim Greenfield with talent not on loan from God. It's a gift. Let's see. I did the quote of the day.
Yeah. You should do your check down list.
So now.
So you wanted to continue to talk about how Trump is not draining the swamp.
Not even close.
Nope. Forget that then.
No, it's not even close to draining the swamp.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I mean, look, Trump is, you know, Trump did some good things. You know, he cut taxes. He cut some regulations. That's good. You know, that's kind of tinkering around the edges of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. And his foreign policy has been pretty good overall. But draining the swamp, I mean, the problem is so much bigger than a handful of corrupt officials at the top of the Department of Justice and the FBI. The problem is the existence of this huge, unconstitutional government bureaucracy that has its tentacles reaching out into every aspect of our lives. And nobody's doing anything about that. And nobody's going to do anything about that.
Well, I mean,
they
can't. What can you do?
It would take a revolution.
Right.
And Americans are not going to get off their butts in front of their TVs and their cell phones and start a revolution.
Especially not with Game of Thrones coming up again.
Yeah, I don't know from Game of Thrones. I always hear everybody talking about Game of Thrones.
It's so
good. No, last time I watched the series was The Shield.
Right.
Michael Chiklis.
Yeah, the bald guy.
That was great. Yeah.
Really into bald guys? Like, you're a bald guy?
I'm not really.
You hired a bald guy?
No, I think that's just coincidental. Although, bald guys do have more testosterone.
I've heard that. Also, I think their brains, the reason we don't have as much hair is because our brains are working overtime.
You know,
some
bald guy created that idea. So, you throw me off track here now.
That's my job, isn't it?
So, draining the swamp.
Yes.
So, now, what I want to say is that what happened, this attempted coup, the conspiracy to overthrow the election of 2016... and install as president not the person who was chosen through our constitutional system with the Electoral College and through voting and the people choosing in our democracy or republic, whatever we want to call it.
Which every time that we have an election, everybody hates that.
Mid-sentence.
Sorry.
What? I'm sorry. Go ahead. While I get my interruption bill out, I forgot the interruption.
I'm actually...
No, I know. You're not really interrupting. But I'm going to have to remember what I was saying. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, all right. So it's the Electoral College. Everybody hates it. But everybody hates it when they lose. Otherwise, they love it.
Of course.
That's always how it goes.
Goes without saying.
Yeah.
So, the point is that this conspiracy, which you all know about, so I'm not going to talk about it, the conspiracy of these high-level Justice Department officials and the so-called intelligence community. We have an intelligence community, which is we have all these intelligence agencies. Not enough. We can't have just one. We have the CIA and the Department of Homeland Security and the NSA, the National Security Council, National Security Advisor, and the FBI. And this is the intelligence community. Well, the leaders of the quote-unquote intelligence community decided that the American people had made a mistake in 2016 and we couldn't have a man like Donald Trump as president, and therefore they knew better, and therefore they were going to substitute their judgment for ours, and we had an attempted coup d'etat, which is now pretty much over. Now that the Mueller report has been released and Trump has been found basically not guilty of colluding with the Russians, and now that William Barr is the Attorney General of the United States and is kicking ass. So, but my point is that we have to ask the question, why did this happen? How did this happen? And I would argue that it couldn't have happened 100 years ago because the apparatus wasn't there. You know, you've got tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people working in these agencies. And I talked about in the last segment, the last episode, I guess I should say, I talked about, you know, we got 80,000 IRS agents, 35,000 FBI agents, 87,000 in the Treasury Department, 113,000, more than that, in the Department of Justice, 229,000 in the Homeland Security Department, not the deposit. You've got hundreds of thousands of these bureaucrats sitting in Washington with nothing to do. They got too much time on their hands. And so they get politically corrupted. And they are a power unto themselves. Nobody controls them. They're unaccountable. The federal bureaucracy is largely unaccountable. Congress has created these agencies, delegated all kinds of power to them. And who's gonna control them? I mean, you know, imagine this. You know why they went after Trump? Do you know why the Mueller investigation was started? You know why Mueller was appointed? Mueller was appointed as special counsel because Donald Trump had the gall, the chutzpah, the temerity to fire the FBI director. Now, the FBI director is an unelected official appointed by the president who was elected by us.
Right.
And he dared to fire Jim Comey. And Comey's buddies weren't happy about it. How dare you fire Jim Comey?
Well, you know it because they had an interleague basketball competition, and you know how tall Comey is. He's like 7'9".
That's it. That's your theory. That's the real conspiracy. So they were pissed off that Comey couldn't be on the team anymore. That's obviously it. Actually, you know what? Comey never played basketball.
Is that right?
Yeah, he admitted that he had a character flaw. One time he admitted that he had a character flaw, which was that people would ask him if he played basketball, and he would say yes, but he never actually did.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think.
Well, did the FBI ask him? Because then
lying to the FBI. No, it's lying from the FBI. That's okay.
Okay, I see.
So anyway. So Trump dared to fire one of the old boys. He dared to fire it, and they, well, you can't do that. Now, I mentioned Rosenstein. He's the ultimate, the master chess player. He's the guy who first he signs off on the FISA warrant. The fourth time he signs off on the FISA warrant to renew it so they can continue investigating Trump. Now, he knew that there was nothing there, so he signs off on it. He's as a deputy attorney general after. After Jeff Sessions recuses himself. Now, why did Jeff Sessions recuse himself? Jeff Sessions is named by Trump to be the Attorney General, and a few days after he's named, he recuses himself. Why did he recuse himself? Because Rosenstein told him to. Rosenstein manipulated Jeff Sessions, who's a little bit of a dim bulb, and persuaded him to recuse himself from anything having to do with Russian collusion. So that means that Rosenstein now himself becomes the de facto attorney general. He's basically running the show. Sessions is out of the picture. So Rosenstein persuades Sessions to recuse himself. So he takes power. He basically takes over the Justice Department. And then he writes a memo to Trump telling him he should fire Jim Comey. Trump takes his advice, fires Jim Comey, and Rosenstein immediately appoints Mueller to be special counsel to investigate Trump for firing Comey. Get it? This is why I'm saying this Rosenstein is a mastermind. And I mean, he did a bunch of other things too. I'm not going to bother going into it. But he's like, he's got his finger in every pie, manipulating the system. You know, refusing to give evidence to Devin Nunes when he's trying to investigate how this all happened. He won't turn over the evidence. But my point is that the problem is you've got these unelected bureaucrats who come to think of themselves as being the real power, the guys who are running things. And they don't like some outsider coming in and criticizing them and firing one of their guys and trying to push them around. So even Chuck Schumer had basically predicted this. You know, when Trump became president, after the election, before Trump became president, and he was criticizing the intelligence community. I forget for what he was criticizing. And Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says, "You know, you go at, you criticize the intelligence community. They'll find every which way on Sunday to screw you over." And boy, was he right. So the real problem is not a few corrupt officials. And look, this whole plot was hatched under the Obama administration. These were Obama appointees, and Obama almost certainly knew what was going on, and probably had given his approval to it. But that will probably never be proved. But we could certainly, we're pretty sure, we do have evidence that Loretta Lynch, who was Obama's attorney general, was involved in this. We can also infer that when the famous meeting occurred between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch on the tarmac, when Hillary was running for president and she's being investigated by the FBI, And you know, when they got found out, it was supposed to be a secret meeting, but somebody got photos of it. And then Clinton says, "Well, we were just talking about our grandchildren." You can be pretty damn sure that what the conversation was more about, and I can't prove this, I'm speculating, but I know, you know, knowing Bill Clinton, I'm pretty sure he said, "Well, how you like your job as Attorney General, Loretta? How you like work being Attorney General?" "Oh, I like it a lot." "Well, you know, I'm sure Hillary would really love to keep you on if she becomes president." You know, that's the way the conversation goes. Nothing illegal. Right. Just small talk, right? So she's involved in this. You know, we know that the Peter Strzok and Lisa Page had run this by Loretta Lynch. So you've got this conspiracy of high-level government officials trying to overthrow an election. And my point is that this wouldn't happen. It couldn't happen, except that these people have too damn much power. And I'm going to ask a question that nobody else has ever dared to ask. And if I asked it, if I raised this in mainstream media or even on Fox News, they'd think I was a kook. Probably think so anyway. Do we need an FBI? Like I said in the last episode, we didn't have an FBI between 1789 and 1908. So that's 119 years that our country somehow managed to survive without a Federal Bureau of Investigation. Why? Because we didn't have so many laws. We have millions of pages, literally millions of pages of laws in the Federal Registry and the regulations and the law, the statutes and the regulations, millions of pages. I saw John Stossel once got all the federal laws, got a printout of all the federal laws, and put him in his TV studio, and it was like filling the room. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like, could anybody possibly know 0.1% of all the federal laws?
No, and I have a feeling that most people break some of those laws and they don't even realize it.
Oh yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, I think you're breaking one right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you've got this bureaucracy. And the Federal Bureau of Investigation, 35,000 agents constantly investigating people. Now, I was investigated once.
You were?
Yeah. I've told this story before. I was investigated in the 1980s for food stamps because I had a used car lot, and we had sold one car where somebody had come in and said, "Will you take food stamps?" And without thinking about it, I wasn't even thinking about whether it was against the law. It didn't even occur to me. So, yeah, well, you know, I know. He says, "Well, I'll give you 2 for 1 on the price, you know. It's a $200 car. I'll give you $400 worth of food stamps." I said, "Yeah, sure." And then after I did, I said, "Hey, I wonder if you're allowed to do that." So, and then an employee of mine sold his personal car for food stamps after that. And so the FBI was investigating him, and apparently they tried to get him to flip on me. And, of course, I was too smart, so, you know, he came to my house and started asking me about the food stamps, and I was like, "What?"
That's it, guys. We've got him. He just admitted it.
We got him. So, hopefully the statute of limitations is run on the food stamp thing. But the great food stamp caper. So, you know, so I was investigated for the FBI for some trivial thing that nobody knew. I didn't, you know, it never even occurred to me it was illegal. You know, I know other people have been investigated by the FBI for this or that. What the hell? Why is the FBI investigating ordinary people? You know, I'm okay with investigating terrorists.
Sure.
You know, if you got some guys who are wearing towels on their head and their neighbors see them, you know, taking lots of guns and bomb-making equipment into the house and they have Mideastern accent, go ahead, investigate the SOBs. I mean, fine. I don't have a problem with that. Take out the SOBs. Go ahead and investigate them. I have no problem with that. But I think that, you know, there are just too many of them. There are too damn many of them. They need something to do to keep them busy. So they're investigating everybody for trivia, and they're investigating Martha Stewart for insider trading when she wasn't even guilty of insider trading, and then they prosecuted for lying to them about the insider trading. It wasn't a crime that she didn't do. You know?
Right.
She's a danger. She's obviously a threat to our society.
That is definitely the person we need in prison.
Yeah. So now there are other famous people who have committed crimes that they don't go after. There are other people who break federal law. There are three prominent people that I know of, four actually, who have committed tax evasion, and nothing happened to them. One was Charles Rangel. Many years ago, he was a Democrat, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, which is like the committee of Congress that oversees the IRS and tax collection of revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Tax evasion.
Yep.
He committed tax evasion.
Right.
And was he prosecuted? No.
No.
He was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Of course not. Another one was Tom Daschle. Tom Daschle was the Senate Majority Leader, also a Democrat. And when he was named by President Obama to be the Secretary of Health and Human Services, during the hearings it came out that he had failed to pay $140,000 in federal income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't pay it. And when he was asked about it at the hearing, he said, "Well, it was an oversight." And I thought,
right.
Oh, an oversight. Well, I'm going to write that down. I'm going to remember that. You know, if they come over after me and say, "It was an oversight." Well, apparently that worked for him. They didn't prosecute him because, after all, it was just an oversight that he didn't pay $140,000. And, of course, he didn't get to be HHS secretary. It knocked him out from that. And then there was one other fella who you would think might know a little bit about the tax laws and how they work. His name was Timothy Geithner. Remember Timothy Geithner?
Yes, I do remember that.
Timothy Geithner was the head of the New York Federal Reserve. He was one of the architects of the TARP bailout in 2008. You know, he was like, you know, there was like Ben Bernanke was the Fed chair,
mm-hmm.
and then Timothy Geithner was like the number two power guy there. So when he was nominated by Obama to be Secretary of the Treasury, which, of course, you know, the IRS is part of the Treasury Department.
Sure.
He's named Secretary of the Treasury. And this minor little offense came out that he had evaded his income taxes. And somehow he got to be He got to be Secretary of the Treasury anyway because they realized that he was the only guy in the country that was qualified. And I guess that's true. He probably would be good at catching tax cheaters since he was one. One other guy was Reverend Al Sharpton. He's had his problems not paying income tax. As far as I know, he still hasn't paid them. They don't go after him. But if you cheat on your taxes, you're screwed. You know, if you're just an ordinary person. So, now, like I say, let me qualify this again by saying that I don't believe in that tax evasion should be a crime. In fact, I don't think it's constitutional because there's nothing in the Constitution that says it should be a crime. You know, they give them the authority to collect taxes, but they don't give them the authority to put people in jail for not paying taxes. So the big problem here is, as I talked about in the last episode, that you've got millions of people who work for the federal government as bureaucrats in bureaucratic agencies that are not authorized by the Constitution. All of these agencies, all of these functions the federal government is performing, and if you didn't hear the last episode, go back and listen to it, because I go into depth, so I'm not going to do it again, about all of these agencies that are unauthorized by the Constitution. They're all unconstitutional. And this all started, as I said, well, of course, the FBI came into existence in 2008. But in 1908, and I mentioned this in the last episode. Right. In 1913, we basically set in motion creating the infrastructure to overthrow the Constitution of the United States. So, the 16th Amendment was passed in 1913. And by the way, I won't go into this because I've talked about it in the past.
Right. So
when they're debating in Congress about the 16th Amendment, well, why do we need an income tax? Because the Constitution, the original constitutional plan, did not include an income tax. There was no income tax. And when Congress had tried to pass it to create an income tax in 1895, the United States Supreme Court struck it down, said it's unconstitutional.
Right.
You're not authorized to have a tax. No direct taxes, it says. You can only have indirect taxes, which basically means the Constitution allowed them to have taxes on goods and services, but not on people. Mm-hmm. And the reason was that the Founding Fathers believed that an income tax, I saw some of them, you know, Jefferson and some of the others, that said it's inquisitorial. That was the expression they used. An income tax is inquisitorial, so we're not going to have it. It's too oppressive. Inquisitorial means, like, think Spanish Inquisition. It means authority, a powerful authority, questioning people and then punishing them if they don't like the answers.
Right.
Okay? That's why they didn't want an income tax. Well, of course, today we have it, and it is inquisitorial. We all know that. You got to fill out these elaborate forms. Some of us have to spend days compiling all the information, which can then be used against us.
Right.
A note, for example, that there are certain members of a certain party in Congress who are now trying to get the tax returns of President Trump. Now, by the way, Trump is the first president or the first person to run for president in like 30 years who refused to release his tax returns. And they made a big issue of it during the campaign, and apparently the voters didn't give a shit, because they elected him even though he wouldn't release his tax returns. And now the Democrats are making a big issue out of it again. They're trying to force him to release his tax returns, or force the Treasury Department to release his tax returns, even though by federal law, tax returns are to be kept private. They're confidential. Now, do you want your tax returns made public? No. And if I were President Trump, you know what I would say? I would say, I'm not releasing my tax returns because they're nobody's fucking business. Or at least I'd say they're nobody's damn business. They're nobody's business. Your tax returns are nobody's business, whether you're a garbage collector or president of the United States. No offense to garbage collectors. It's a perfectly respectable profession.
Possibly more so.
Yeah. So, no good can come out of this. And you shouldn't force people running for president to disclose their tax returns, because you may have good people who, for good reason, don't want to release their tax returns. So, but when they created the income tax, when they debated it in 1913, the main arguments for not having an income, or I'm sorry, the main arguments in favor of creating a tax, an income tax, were, number one, they were only going to tax the top 1%. Can you believe it? They were already talking about the top 1% in 1913. We're only going to tax the top 1%. Number two, it's only going to be a maximum of 6%. We're never going to raise it above 6%. Number three, the tax will only be used in times of war or national emergency. And number four, it will reduce the national debt. Now that one's funny, because the national debt was $1 billion then, and it's $22 trillion today. All four of the arguments that were made in favor of creating an income tax have been proven to be false by history.
Yeah, this was in 1913 where they put this.
You're looking it up. Yeah, I know my stuff.
No, you do. I'm just verifying. It's 1913. They go, hey, we're going to, I know it's unconstitutional, but we're going to do this.
No, it's not unconstitutional because they made an amendment to the Constitution.
Oh, they made the amendment.
Yeah, they made the amendment. Currently, it's unconstitutional. It was unconstitutional then. They had to get an amendment.
We're going to amend the Constitution to allow for this, but don't worry.
Yeah.
Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Right.
We're totally going to take care of you. We're only going to tax the top 1%.
Yeah. So everything they said was false.
Yes.
They didn't only tax the top 1%. They tax everybody. They didn't limit it to 6%. It went up to 90% at one point. Today, I think the top rate's around 37%.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't only use it in times of war and national emergency. It's there
it's
all the
obvious,
time.
Yeah.
And it sure didn't reduce the national debt.
No.
Okay, so the more money they take in, you know, this is counterintuitive. Most people believe that if the government takes in more revenue by raising taxes, it will reduce the national debt. In fact, experience has shown for the last 106 years that whenever they raise the tax rates, the national debt goes higher. Why? Because when they take in more money, they think they have more money, so they spend more money, and they go deeper into debt. And that's why even like David Stockman, he's a brilliant guy and was Reagan's budget maker, he says, well, we need to reduce the national debt, and to do that, we need to cut spending and raise taxes. No.
You need to cut spending first.
You need to cut spending. You don't need to raise taxes because raising taxes doesn't work. It just slows economic growth and revenues don't go up. So the point, the main point is that by creating an income tax, it made available, in those days, billions of dollars to the federal government. Today, it makes trillions. Federal government takes about $4 trillion. No, it doesn't take in $4 trillion. It spends $4 trillion. It spends about $4.2, $4.3 trillion. And they're taking in about $3.5 trillion. So that it makes trillions and trillions of dollars available to the federal government. And that's what's permitted the government to create this monster bureaucracy that harasses our people and eats out our substance. And not only that, but every once in a while it engages in a coup d'etat to overthrow the President of the United States. That's where it comes from. It's the tax. And then, as if that wasn't enough, they said, well, we got an income tax. Let's also, same year, 1913, a year that will live in infamy, they created the Federal Reserve System.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the significance of the Federal Reserve System? The Federal Reserve is a central bank which nobody understands. I mean, I've studied it. I still don't understand it, how they work.
Yeah.
They work in secrecy, largely in secrecy. And they're able to create money. Somehow, magically, they create money. Now, before we had a Federal Reserve System, the federal government had money from tax revenues. And all the money was based on a gold standard. We had a gold standard, so all the paper cash was backed by gold. So if you had $20 in cash, you could go down to the Treasury and get an ounce of gold. So we had a gold standard. Now they create the Federal Reserve Bank, and its powers were limited to start, but its powers have expanded ever since. And the Federal Reserve basically props up, supports and incentivizes politicians who take us deeper into debt. They make it much easier for the politicians to take it to create debt. How do they do that? Well, think about it. In 2008, we all know we had a crash. The stock market crashed. The financial system almost came tumbling down. I won't say collapsed because there would have been some banks that would have survived, but a lot of the big ones were on the brink of collapsing. The biggest banks, you know, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and so forth. So the government steps in to bail them out. Now the federal and Obama comes into power, and he implements all these anti-business policies. He raises taxes. He creates Obamacare. He expands environmental regulations. He won't let oil companies drill offshore and on federal lands. He does all these things that are damaging to the economy. Okay, and he's borrowing money at record rates. Under the Obama administration, 2009 to 2017, the federal debt doubled from $10 trillion to $20 trillion. So in other words, Obama added $10 trillion to the amount of money the federal government had borrowed, right? And he spent it on all these bureaucratic programs that didn't do any good. I mean, a trillion of it disappeared into something called the stimulus program, and nobody knows where the money went, okay? Yes. And he, you know, was hostile to business, raising taxes and creating, forcing them to adopt Obamacare and all these regulations. And he slowed the economy. Economic growth for the 8 years of Obama averaged only 1.8% GDP growth per year. But the anti-business policies of Obama would have been far more disastrous, except for the fact that the Federal Reserve looks at what Obama is doing, looks at what Obama and Congress are doing, damaging the economy, and they says, well, they're causing the economy to slow down. So we're going to counteract that by creating easy money. And so they lower interest rates to zero, and they push this money out into the banks. Here, take it. It's zero. You don't have to pay any interest on it. And that, to some degree, offsets the anti-business, anti-growth policies of the Obama administration, makes it possible, because if they hadn't done that, Obama policies, in all likelihood, would have created or perpetrated a severe recession, and he would have lost in 2012. See, so this is how the Federal Reserve facilitates corrupt politicians who are expanding government power and damaging the private sector. They make that possible. And they also facilitated the bank bailout, which was a crooked deal. I mean, the bank bailout in 2008, they called the TARP, Troubled Asset Relief Program. And what was troubled was the program. It was troubled. It was a troubled asset relief program. But they called it a troubled asset relief program as the assets were troubled. And they bailed out the banks. They gave them $867 billion of taxpayer money. And then these geniuses took over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two agencies that they were previously more or less private. They were federally created, but they were private companies that finance the mortgage market, right? Which is probably like the biggest industry in the country. It's a home mortgage market. It's homes.
Yeah.
You know, which is most people's biggest asset, their homes. They take over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and they create these rules that make it extremely difficult for banks to lend money. And then they wonder why the housing market declines by 30% over the following 5 years. Home values declined 30%. There wasn't a recession in the housing market. It was a depression. I know, because I'm in that business, right? So how does this work? Okay, not to get too complicated, I'm in the weeds, but look, the banks are borrowing money from the Federal Reserve at 0%. Now, they've already borrowed $867 billion from the Treasury, which they have to pay back. How do they pay it back? Well, the Fed lends them money at zero. They could make money by lending that money to home buyers and to finance homes. But Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are making it so difficult to do that with all their rules and regulations. I won't get into details, but believe me, I came across it myself, so I know what it was. Fannie and Freddie are not letting the banks lend money. You know, I won't say they're not letting. You can still lend, but they make it really difficult for people to qualify for the loans. So they're killing the housing market, and the banks are not lending money on mortgages. So if the banks aren't lending money on mortgages, how do they make the money to pay back the $867 billion that the Treasury lent them? And do you know what the answer is?
No.
They lend the money to the United States government. Okay? They borrow it from the Fed, which is part of the government, and then they lend it to the Treasury, which they already owe $867 billion to. And the Treasury pays them 3% on a 10-year. So it's a pretty good deal for them. You borrow at 0%, and then you lend it back to the same guy, the government, that lend it to you at 0%, and you lend it back to them at 3%, and it's zero risk. It's U.S. Treasury bills, can't default,
right.
Zero risk. You get 3% for doing nothing. And I said to myself, well, why do Fannie and Freddie make it so difficult for the banks to lend money for mortgages and create this depression in the housing market? Why don't they let them lend? And I finally figured it out one day. They didn't want them to lend to you and me for mortgages or refinancing our houses or building houses or buying houses. They wanted them to lend it to the government because that's the only place to lend it, because you can't do home mortgages. So they lent it to the government so that Obama could finance Obamacare and the stimulus package and all the roads and bridges that were never built. They wanted them to lend to the federal government. That's how Obama was able to go $10 trillion deeper in debt without pushing interest rates up. See, usually if the federal government borrows a lot of money,
right,
it's law, supply, and demand. When you borrow money, the price of money is interest rates. So that normally that would push the interest rates up, but it didn't. It didn't because the Fed made it, forced the banks to lend the money to the government, so there was plenty of money available to lend. And that's how we got into a national debt of $22 trillion. This is the crooked deal. This is the deep state. This is where the funding comes from for the deep state bureaucrats who harass us in our businesses and in our property and in our private affairs, and who every once in a while decide to overthrow a president of the United States. That's how they did it. And if you say, well, maybe we should get rid of the Federal Reserve and go back to a gold standard, then you're a kook. Then they say you're a kook. Now, there have been a couple of prominent people who have said this.
Yeah.
Ron Paul. Ron Paul advocated that when he was president. Get rid of the Federal Reserve. He's a kook. Stephen Moore advocated getting rid of the Federal Reserve, going back to a gold standard. And then when he was named to the Federal Reserve, he's a kook. Trump nominated him, and they defeated his nomination because he's too extreme. Because he recognizes how corrupt this system is. So you got these two pillars, the income tax and the Federal Reserve. If it weren't for those two pillars, we wouldn't have a deep state. We wouldn't have this humongous bureaucracy that consumes more than $4 trillion a year and harasses us and oppresses us. It wouldn't exist because there wouldn't be any money to create it. And by the way, where does the $4 trillion go?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you where some of it goes. It goes to me. I get it.
You get it.
I get Social Security. They give me money every month. They put it in my bank account. They pay my medical bills. It's called Medicare. And I'm like, great. And I've thanked my audience before, those of you who work. I mean, if you work, I don't know how you have time to listen to this podcast. So maybe you're all on welfare. I don't know. But I thank you before. Younger guys who were younger than me, who were working hard to support their families and paying taxes for my medical care and my Social Security. And not to brag, but I'm probably richer than most of you, so thank you very much. But you think I'm going to not take the money?
You wouldn't be a very rich person.
Of course I'm taking the money.
Of course you are.
It's against my principles to turn down money. Mm-hmm. So that's the deep state. And that's why you can't drain the swamp. When the federal government is handing out more than $4 trillion a year, you're going to have people who are there in Washington with their hands out getting their share of the loot. And, it's not just coincidence that we didn't have lobbyists in Washington, D.C. 100 years ago. I mean, there may have been a few. But I don't know how many. I think there's more than 100,000 lobbyists in Washington now, right? Every major corporation has lobbyists in Washington. Every major company gives donations to politicians, contributions to politicians, not just corporations, also nonprofits. Do you think Planned Parenthood gets billions of dollars a year from the federal government without lining any pockets? You can say, oh, well, we should defund Planned Parenthood. Conservatives always want to defund Planned Parenthood. Well, what about your organizations? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure the liberal organizations, the lefty organizations, get more from the feds than the conservative organization. The federal government funds public broadcasting, which includes National Pinko Public Pansy Radio, NPR, right? Which puts out a left-wing agenda promoting the Democrats, the Democrats who give money. It's not the Republicans who want to give money to NPR. It's the Democrats. And their news reporting is... I respect Rush Limbaugh. Because Rush Limbaugh says, I'm a conservative. This is my opinion. He doesn't pretend to be a news organization.
Right, and that's, NPR, how, that's how it should be portrayed.
NPR pretends to be a news organization, and it's a steady stream of left-wing propaganda. Every once in a while, NPR does something balanced. They'll do a balanced report on, let's say, President Trump. They'll do a balanced report by they'll have a liberal who hates Trump talk about Trump at some issue, and they'll balance it out by having a conservative who hates Trump. So it's balanced reporting. They'll get Jonah Goldberg. I like Jonah Goldberg. He's a smart guy. He happens to hate Trump, right? So when the first time I heard Jonah Goldberg on NPR, I was thinking, wow, I can't believe NPR is expanding. They're going to actually interview a conservative, and he's become like a regular commentator. And then I listened to him, it was Jonah Goldberg bashing Trump, and they have him back on every once in a while to bash Trump.
Right.
So they say, see, everybody hates Trump. Liberals, even conservative intellectuals like Jonah Goldberg. Okay, but I digress, which is not unusual. You can't get rid of the bureau. You can't get rid of the lobbyists. You can't get rid of the crooked campaign contributions. You can't do it by outlawing money going to politicians. That's not going to work. As long as the government is handing out trillions of dollars a year, mm-hmm. there are going to be special interests. They're going to find a way to corrupt the politicians. They do it legally now, so it's above board. We can see it. They make the contributions, and I had Richard Strauss as a guest on the show, right? So Richard Strauss was like my best friend in high school. And he told me a story one time, not on the show, but he told me a story that he was representing some nonprofit corporation that had been getting funds from the federal government for 30 years. 30 years, every year the government was giving them money to fund their nonprofit. He wouldn't tell me which one it was, right? And then somehow some chairman of some Senate committee got pissed off at them for some reason, and the money flow stopped. And so Richard said that he was representing them, and the guy said, well, see if you can get me my funding from the federal government back. Richard went and talked to this chairman of this committee. He said, what'll it take to get the funding, to get the funding restored to this group? And he said, $35,000. He wrote him a check the next day. Campaign contribution, $35,000. He got his funding back. That's Washington. That's the cesspool.
Yeah.
You call it the swamp. I call it the cesspool. That's the cesspool. And that's not going to go away as long as the federal government is given. And I don't see why the federal government should give a nickel to any single nonprofit organization. I don't give a damn what they do. Let them get their, if people believe in their cause, let them get the money from the people,
right,
not from the treasury.
Right, and you feel that, you do feel that way about all nonprofits including churches?
Yeah, I don't want him giving money to Jerry Falwell or, you know, Falwell's dead. How about Jerry Falwell Jr.?
Hopefully they're not still
I don't want him giving money to Pat Robertson or Al Sharpton. Okay? Why are they giving, what the hell? Why are they giving money away? Why are they giving our money away? Yeah. If you've got a nonprofit and it's a cause that so many people believe in, well, then get them to contribute to you. Don't take it from me.
So, yeah, I agree with you. You're looking around in disbelief.
Well, before we go, I think it would be worth pointing out that something that you told me off the air. You know, Stuart, if you've listened to some of the older episodes of The Decline and Fall of America starring Jim Greenfield, you notice that Stuart and I have had some very heated arguments. Now, Stuart doesn't usually argue with me about economic issues. I think he's pretty libertarian and therefore sympathetic to my view. I'm not a libertarian, but I have pretty, you can tell, I'm like, you know, anti-government. But where we've had the heated arguments have been about like social issues, like involving transgenders or gay rights or women's rights or all that crap. So Stuart told me that something happened that made him kind of take a slightly different view about that. You want to tell the story?
Sure. So I was scrolling through Facebook and a Facebook friend of mine had posted up a picture of five white, nondescript white guys sitting at a table, laughing and having a good time. And the caption was, she had written in, five cis male, heterosexual, able-bodied white men sitting at a table.
Cis male, what does cis male mean?
It means that, you know, you were born a male and you act like a male.
Oh, so like normal, like a guy like me.
Yes.
Yeah, I consider myself normal, at least in that respect. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. So, you put up, you know, what you would call this group of people. And, of course, you go down the list and it's, I mean, it was horrific. It was like, I don't remember any of them, but they were derogatory comments about these five white, nondescript white guys sitting at a table.
Oh, so people on Twitter were making derogatory comments about them because they were white heterosexuals.
Able-bodied people.
Okay.
So, go down the list and I'm seeing like all these really just mean. They're mean. And I somewhat get it. It's the punch up. I get it. But the problem with it is it's five nondescript white people. It's not a punch up. It's a generalization, which is, to me, a generalization is a bad thing anywhere.
So was it like mean comments like about their appearances or something like that?
It was
personal?
It wasn't personal. That's the whole point. These were just five white guys sitting at a table. So it was, for me, I wasn't the only white guy that mentioned this. It was, hey, this seems like a bad tactic to take because you have some friends that are cis, male, white, heterosexual, able-bodied people.
And you're one.
I'm one. And I'm a huge proponent for that for that group. I'm a big fan. I do what I can to help them out because I feel like there should be no, you know, bigotry or anything like that.
Wait, you try to help out which group?
The LGBTQIA.
Okay. Because it sounded like you meant the cis.
No.
By the way, what does cis stand for? Okay, cis, but just means so, heterosexual. Okay.
Just heterosexual males, like okay. Guys, okay. Right? Okay, so I put up, I said, it looks like five guys at a table having fun. The issue I have with this is that what if I was one of those people? And this person who I'm a friend with, supposedly, says, if you were sitting at that table, I'd hate you just the same.
Okay, and this was a transgender guy.
Yeah, this is someone who has transitioned from a male to a female.
Okay, transgender, but she is a friend of yours.
Yeah.
And she made the comment.
She started this whole thread. And
she was saying that she would hate you if you were sitting at that table.
She would be fearful of me if I was sitting at that table.
Why?
I don't know. That was the whole thing. And my reply back was, okay, but if that was five black men sitting at a table and you made that comment, that wouldn't be okay. If that was five transgender people sitting at that table, that would not be an okay thing to say.
Right.
But this is all okay because you're generalizing just a group, which is, by the way, exactly the tactics that they used against black people and they used against everybody.
Exactly.
This is a horrific thing you're doing.
Do you remember any of the kinds of comments to give us a sense of a sample of the kind of comments they were making about these
people? I have to look it up.
But it was like racist comments about them?
They were like racist comments towards these white guys. So my point was, look, if there are people at that table you want to make fun of the people at the table. That's a punch up. What you're doing right now is not. And I got shouted down. I was shocked. And it was like people were saying things that I have stood next to at events for this group. They were saying things to me that were
about you.
About me.
Now you become the target.
I was the target at this point. How I am so privileged and what a piece of crap I was. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so what it did for me was it really highlighted why Trump is probably going to win again. I mean, without a doubt, will win again. He will.
But now, did you react like, did you take it personally? Did you feel like the same that you might feel if you were in a room with a bunch of people who were insulting you to your face? Did you feel that way in receiving that? Or did you say, it's just a bunch of idiots on Twitter?
Well, because they're friends of mine.
They're people you know.
They're people I know. So it is very much like...
It's personal.
It's personal. And
just not personal, just business.
Yeah, it was really kind of an odd situation to be in. And it gave me pause. It's like, how can I support a group that hates me? It's very difficult. And that's the thing they were not clicking, is that there were five other white guys that were like, this isn't cool.
And they don't know anything about these guys. They may all be sympathetic to transgender rights and all that
exactly.
crap.
Exactly. Well, somebody actually identified all five of the people. And I was like, okay, that's okay. If they've done something specific, then you should target them. But this is not okay.
See, you know, I think I've said something to you to the effect at some point. Maybe I haven't. But the idea that when these wackos, and I know you don't think they're wackos, but to me they're wackos.
Well, to be fair,
when they come for us, when they come to put the white heterosexual privileged men in concentration camps, which they will call re-education camps. But if they get power, they will come for us. And when they do, guys like you who are sympathetic to their cause and left-leaning, you'll be the last ones to be put in the concentration camps. But you will end up there because you are a white guy and you've benefited from white privilege and you're exuding toxic masculinity. It's disgusting. Yeah. And they're going to get you.
Yes.
Now, you express sympathy for them, and to me it would be like, okay, so maybe there were a few Jews who joined the Nazi party in Germany and they were the last ones into the gas chambers, mm-hmm. but they did end up there. So, you know, I know you're not supposed to use the Nazi analogy, but it's just an analogy.
Whatever.
So, anyway. So
I think everybody can hate Nazis.
But I mean, what do you think? Did that change how you view the whole thing and suddenly realize that you're being forced to identify as a hetero white male, even though you don't really particularly want to do that? I mean, how did it affect you?
Here's how it affected me. It made me realize that... that movement needs to kind of, it's still in a healing process, and it's very difficult because their anger is so strong, and it is based on things that happened long ago, and I'm not saying let's forget those things that happened long ago, but let's not repeat those things. Does that make sense? I feel like they're just trying to your point, just reverse what happened 200 years
ago. Oh, I see.
And that's not what should be the target. The target, if we're talking about equality, it should be
equality.
Equality.
Yeah, no.
And I didn't
forget equality.
Yeah, I did not do those things 200 years ago.
It doesn't matter.
Do I think that those things happened, and do I think that those things should be? And this is another topic.
Yeah, we don't have time to go into another topic.
No, but we you know, reparations for those types of things, possibly. I don't see anything wrong with that. If I committed murder 20 years ago, I'm still on.
Well, I had a reaction similar to you to the whole reparations thing. I said, well, wait a minute. You know, you want reparations because you say the ancestors of white people enslaved the ancestors of black people today? You know, the ancestors of modern white people enslaved the ancestors of modern black people, and therefore white people should pay reparations in order to compensate the black people or the descendants of those slaves. And I say, well, yeah, except I don't really think that's that fair, because when your ancestors were being enslaved, my ancestors were in Russia and Ukraine, being the victims of pogroms. So instead of me having to pay compensation, I think I should get some reparations too, if we can get them from the Russians,
right?
You know, the Ukrainians.
You're not wrong,
and it's which to me just kind of is reductio ad absurdum, and it points out the absurdity of that argument. But I'll tell you this, and I'll let you respond. But
this didn't
really come into focus to me until the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. During the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, I heard these kinds of, to me, insane, wacky arguments being made about white privilege and male toxicity and you know, this is how white privileged white men behave when they're 17. They sexually assault drunken teenage girls, whatever, you know, whatever they were saying about him. And it became not just about him, but they were making it about white men, heterosexual white men. And that's when I realized we got targets on our backs.
Yeah.
Now, these people are still a minority, but they're growing very fast, and I think they're dangerous. You know, these are the kind of ideological fanatics who do put people into concentration camps.
If
they get power, it's going to be ugly.
And that's the problem, is that if you're seeking power, you're probably not the right person to be in the position.
That's an irony, isn't it?
It is.
Of democracy.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I would say at this point, unless you got something else you want to say, thus another exciting edition of The Decline and Fall of America, starring Jim Greenfield with my sidekick, Stuart Rice, is coming to a conclusion. This is Jim Greenfield offering simple solutions to complex problems.
You're welcome for listening to another brilliant installment of The Decline and Fall of America, starring Jim Greenfield, formerly known as The Jim Greenfield Show. If you have a topic you would like Jim to talk about, or if you think Jim is brilliant and want to cheer him on, or you think Jim is an idiot that doesn't know what he's talking about, send an email to jimgreenfieldshowpodcast@gmail.com. Follow the show on Facebook at Decline and Fall of America, or on Twitter at JGS Podcast, or you can call and leave a message for Jim at 503-512-0811, and your message will likely get played on the show. And now, our beautiful outro music, The Ode to Jim.
14 years on the radio, Jim Greenfield served humanity. His bosses fired him 7 times. They said he's no Sean Hannity. Greenfield tried to stay out of trouble and be discreet as best he could. He claims the reason he got canned behind the mic, he's just too good. Jim's enemies tried to silence him in panic and hysterica, 'cause Jim Greenfield blames them for the decline and fall of America.